I decided I needed to go outside for a little fresh air and a fag. I stepped down into the sunken garden. They were playing Viennese waltzes in a rather smart, fan-de-millennium sort of way. Then suddenly I heard a noise above. A figure was silhouetted against the French windows. It was a blonde adolescent, an attractive public schoolboy type. "Hi," said the youth. He lit a cigarette unsteadily and stared, heading down the stairs towards me. "Don't suppose you fancy a dance?" "Sorry," he said, holding out his hand as if he were at the Eton Open Day, and he was a former Home Secretary who had forgotten his manners. "Simon Dalrymple." "Bridget Jones," I said, holding out my hand stiffly. "Hi, yeah, really nice to meet you. So can we have a dance?" he said. "I mean, out here?" I hesitated. I was flattered, to tell you the truth. What, with this and performing a miracle in front of Mark Darcy, it was all starting to go to my head. "Please," pressed Simon. "I've never danced with an older woman before." "Oh, gosh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean..." He went on, seeing my face. "I mean, someone who's left school," he said, seizing my hands passionately. "Would you mind?" Simon Dalrymple had obviously been taught ballroom dancing from birth, so it was rather nice being expertly guided to and fro. But the trouble was, he seemed to have, well, not to put too fine a point on it, the most enormous erection I've ever had the good fortune to come across. And us dancing so close, it was not the sort of thing one could pass off as a pencil case. "I'll take over now, Simon," said a voice. It was Mark Darcy. "Come along, back inside. You should be in bed now." Simon looked completely crushed. He blushed scarlet and hurried back into the party. "May I?" said Mark, holding out his hands to me. "No," I said, furious. "What's the matter?" "That was a horrible thing to do to a young whippersnapper, throwing your weight about and humiliating him like that at a sensitive age." Then I noticed he looked rather agitated and hurt. He paused, then started pacing around the patio, sighing and running his hand through his hair. "Have you read any good books lately?" "Unbelievable." "Mark," I said, "why don't you ask me something else? Ring the changes a bit. Ask me if I've got any hobbies or a view on the single European currency." He began again. "Or if I had to sleep with Douglas Hurd, Michael Howard or Jim Davidson, which one I'd choose." "Actually, no contest, Douglas Hurd." "Douglas Hurd?" said Mark. "Yes. So deliciously strict, but fair." "Yes," said Mark thoughtfully. "You say that, but Michael Howard's got an extremely attractive and intelligent wife. He must have some sort of hidden charms." "Like what, you mean?" I said childishly, hoping he would say something about sex. "Well, he might be a good shagger, I suppose," I supplied. "Will you have dinner with me, Bridget?" he said abruptly and rather crossly, as if he was going to sit me down at a table somewhere and tell me off. I stopped and stared at him. "Has my mum put you up to this?" I said suspiciously. "No, I..." Suddenly I realised what was going on. "It's your mum, isn't it?" "Well, my mother has..." "I don't want to be asked out to dinner just because your mum wants you to. Anyway, what would we talk about? You'd just ask me if I've read any good books lately, and then I'd have to make up some pathetic lie, and..." He stared at me in consternation. "But Una Alconbury told me you were a sort of literary whizwoman, completely obsessed with books." "Did she?" I said, rather pleased by the idea suddenly. "What else did she tell you?" "Well, that you're a radical feminist and have an incredibly glamorous life." "Ooh," I purred. "With millions of men taking you out." "I heard about Daniel. I'm sorry." "I suppose you did try to warn me," I muttered sulkily. What have you got against him, anyway? He slept with my wife, he said, 2 weeks after our wedding. I stared at him aghast as a voice above us shouted, Marky! It was Natasha, silhouetted against the lights, peering down to see what was going on. Marky! She called again. Last Christmas, Mark went on hurriedly, I thought if my mother said the words Bridget Jones just once more, I would go to the Sunday People and accuse her of abusing me as a child with a bicycle pump. Then when I met you and I was wearing that ridiculous diamond pattern jumper that Una had bought me for Christmas. Oh, Bridget, all the other girls I know are so lacquered over. I don't know anyone else who would fasten a bunny tail to their pants or... Mark! Yelled Natasha, heading down the stairs towards us. But you're going out with somebody, I said, rather pointing out the obvious. I'm not anymore, actually, he said. Just dinner? Sometime? Okay, I whispered. Okay. Afterwards, I thought I'd better go home. What with Natasha watching my every move as if she were a crocodile and I was getting a bit near to her eggs, and me having given Mark Darcy my address and phone number and having fixed to see him next Tuesday. Tuesday, 3rd of October. 7:30 p.m. Complete panic stations. Mark is coming round to pick me up in half an hour. 7:50 p.m. Oh, God! Oh, God! Still have not washed hair. We'll quickly get into bath. 8:00 p.m. Drying hair now. Very much hope Mark Darcy is late, as do not want him to find me in dressing gown with wet hair. 8:05 p.m. Hair is more or less dry now. Then just have to do makeup, get dressed and put mess behind sofa. 8:15 p.m. Still not here. Very good. Keen on a man who comes round late, in stark contrast to people who come round early. Startling and panicking one, and finding unsightly items still unhidden in the home. 8:30 p.m. This is weird. Does not seem like him to be more than half an hour late. 9 p.m. Cannot quite believe it. Mark Darcy has stood me up. Bastard. Thursday, 5th of October. 11 a.m. In Lou's at work. Oh, no. Oh, no. On top of humiliating standing up debacle, found self horrible centre of attention at morning meeting today. Right, Bridget, said Richard Finch. I'm going to give you another chance. The Isabella Rossellini trial. Verdict expected today. Get yourself down to the High Court. I want a hard-headed interview. Ask her if this means it's okay for us all to murder people every time we don't fancy having sex with them. What are you waiting for, Bridget? Off you go! I had no idea. Not even a glimmer of a clue as to what he was talking about. 11:05 a.m. Thank God for patchouli. Bumped into her as came out of the toilets. Are you okay? She said. You look a bit freaked out. No, no, I'm fine, I said. Sure? She stared at me for a moment. Listen, right, you realise he didn't mean Isabella Rossellini at the meeting, don't you? He's thinking of Elena Rossini, right? Oh, thank God and all his angels in heaven above. Elena Rossini is the children's nanny accused of murdering her employer after he allegedly subjected her to repeated rape and effective house arrest for 18 months. I grabbed a couple of newspapers to gen up and ran for a taxi. 3 p.m. Was hanging around outside the High Court for ages with the camera crew and a whole gang of reporters all waiting for the trial to end. Was bloody good fun, actually. Even started to see the funny side of being stood up by Mr. Perfect Pants, Mark Darcy. Suddenly realised I'd run out of cigarettes, so I whispered to the cameraman if he thought it would be okay if I nipped to the shop for 5 minutes, and he said it would be fine, because you're always given warning when they're about to come out, and they'd come and get me if it was about to happen. When they heard I was going to the shop, a lot of reporters asked me if I'd bring them fags and sweets, and so it took quite a while working it all out. I was just standing in the shop trying to keep all the chains separate with the shopkeeper when this bloke walked in, obviously in a real hurry, and said, "Could you let me have a box of Quality Street?" As if I wasn't there. "Excuse me, does the word queue mean anything to you?" I said in a hoity-toity voice, turning round to look at him. I made a weird noise. It was Mark Darcy, all dressed up in his barrister outfit. He just stared at me in that way he has. "Where in the name of arse were you last night?" I said. "I might ask the same question of you," he said icily. At that moment, the camera assistant burst into the shop. "Bridget," he yelled, "we missed the interview. Elena Rossini's come out and gone. Did you get my minstrels?" Speechless, I grabbed the edge of the sweet counter for support. "Missed it," I said as soon as I could steady my breathing. "Missed it! Oh, God! I'll be sacked! Did the others get interviews?" "Actually, nobody got any interviews with her," said Mark Darcy. "Didn't they?" I said, looking up at him desperately. "But how do you know?" "Because I was defending her, and I told her not to give any," he said casually. "Look, she's out there in my car." I looked round and saw Elena Rossini in his car. "So, where were you last night?" asked Mark. "Waiting for bloody you," I said between clenched teeth. "What, at 8:05, when I rang on your doorbell 12 times? "Yes, I was..." I said, feeling the first twinges of realization. "Drying my hair." "Pig dryer?" he said. "Yes, 1600 volts, salon selectives," I said proudly. "Why?" "Maybe you should get a quieter hairdryer or begin your toilette a little earlier." "Come on," he said, laughing. "Get your cameraman ready. I'll see what I can do for you." 9 p.m. "Cannot believe how marvellously everything has turned out. I've just played the Good Afternoon headlines back for the 5th time. Good Afternoon, the only television programme to bring you an exclusive interview with Elena Rossini, just minutes after today's not guilty verdict. Our home news correspondent Bridget Jones brings you this exclusive report." Friday, 6th of October. Keep hoping Mark might ring me up and ask me for another date after the hairdryer debacle. Maybe I should write him a note to say thank you for the interview and sorry about the hairdryer. It's not because I fancy him or anything. Simple good manners demands it. Thursday, 12th of October. Incensed by patronising article in the paper by smug married journalist. It was headlined, "The Joy of Single Life." They're young, ambitious and rich, but their lives hide an aching loneliness. When they leave work, a gaping emotional hole opens up before them. Lonely, style-obsessed individuals seek consolation in comfort food of the kind their mother might have made. Huh! Bloody nerve! How does Mrs. Smug, married at 22, think she knows? I'm going to write an article based on dozens of conversations with smug marrieds. When they leave work, they always burst into tears because, though exhausted, they have to peel potatoes and put all the washing in while their porky bloat husbands slump, burping in front of the football, demanding plates of chips. On other nights, they plop, wearing unstylish pinnies, into big black holes after their husbands have rung to say they are working late again, with the sound of creaking leatherware and sexy singletons tittering in the background. Sunday, 15th of October, 8:55 p.m. Just nipping out to get some fags prior to getting changed, ready for BBC Pride and Prejudice. Love the nation being so addicted. The basis of my own addiction, I know, is my simple human need for Darcy to get off with Elizabeth. Tuesday, 24th of October. On marvellous roll with work. Ever since Elena Rossini interview, seems can do no wrong. "Come on! Come on! Rosemary West!" Richard Finch was saying when I got into the office. Bit late, actually. Sort of thing that could happen to anyone. holding up his fists like a boxer. I'm thinking lesbian rape victims. I'm thinking Jeanette Winterson. I'm thinking what lesbians actually do. Suddenly he was looking straight at me. Do you know? Everyone stared at me. Come on, Bridget, fucking late again, he shouted impatiently. What do lesbians actually do in bed? I took a deep breath. Actually, I think we should be doing the off-screen romance between Darcy and Elizabeth. He looked me up and down slowly.
Brilliant, he said reverently. You, my darling, he said to one of my breasts, are an absolute fucking genius.
I've always hoped I would turn out to be a genius, but I never believed it would actually happen to me. Or my left breast. November, Friday, 3rd of November, 11 a.m. Been thinking about Mark. Jude suggested I should have a dinner party and invite him. Brilliant idea. Have bought marvellous new recipe book by Marco Pierre White. At last understand the simple difference between home cooking and restaurant food. As Marco says, it is all to do with concentration of taste. The secret of sauces, of course, apart from taste concentration, lies in real stock. One must boil up large pans of fish bones, chicken carcass, etc., then freeze them in form of ice stock cubes. This will be the menu. Veloute of celery, very simple and cheap when have made stock. Char-grilled tuna on veloute of cherry tomatoes coulis with confit of garlic and fondant potatoes. Confit of oranges, Grand Marnier crème anglaise. Will be marvellous. Will become known as brilliant but apparently effortless cook. Mark Darcy will be very impressed and will realise I am not common or incompetent. Thursday, 9th of November. V excited about the dinner party. Fixed for a week on Tuesday. This is the guest list. Jude, Vile Richard, Sharon, Tom, Pretentious Jerome, Magda, Jeremy, me, Mark Darcy. Mark seemed very pleased when I rang him up. What are you going to cook? He said. Are you good at cooking? Oh, you know, I said. Actually, I usually use Marco Pierre White. It's amazing how simple it can be if one goes for a concentration of taste. Saturday, 11th of November. Tom has disappeared. Sharon rang saying thought she'd seen him from the window of the taxi on Thursday night, wandering around Ladbroke Grove with his hands over his mouth, and she thought a black eye. She left two messages for him yesterday, asking if he was okay, but had had no reply. I suddenly realised as she spoke that I had left a message for Tom myself on Wednesday, asking if he was around at the weekend, and he hadn't replied, which is not like him at all. Frantic phoning ensued. Tom's phone just rang and rang. So I called Jude, who said she hadn't heard from him either. I tried Tom's Pretentious Jerome, nothing. Jude said she'd ring Simon, who lives in the next street to Tom, and get him to go round. She called back 20 minutes later, saying Simon had rung Tom's bell for ages and hammered on the door, but no reply. 3:30 p.m. Wild thoughts ranging through head. Start to wonder whether I'm really good friend. We're all so busy and selfish in London. Would it be possible for one of friends to be so unhappy that they... Oh, that's where I put this month's Marie Claire. On top of fridge. 5 p.m. Just called Jude again. Do you think we should call the police and get them to break in, I said. I already rang them, said Jude. What did they say? I couldn't help feeling secretly annoyed that Jude had rung the police without clearing it with me first. I am Tom's best friend, not Jude. They didn't seem very impressed. They said to call them if we hadn't heard anything by Monday. Something's wrong, though, I just know it, I said in a mysterious, loaded voice, realising for the first time what an intensely instinctive and intuitive person I am. 7 p.m. Extraordinary! After spoke to Jude, could not face shopping or similar light-hearted things, so did some tidying up. Was just getting a plant pot out of the cupboard under sink when heard a jangling sound. I suddenly hit myself hard on the forehead. They were Tom's spare keys from when he went to Ibiza. I rang Jude and we decided we'd get Sharon to come as well. None of us spoke or looked at each other as we walked up the front steps.
"Should you ring first?"
whispered Sharon as I lifted the key to the lock.
"I'll do it,"
said Jude. She looked at us quickly, then pressed the buzzer. We stood in silence. Nothing. I was just about to slip the key in the lock when a voice on the end said, "Hello?"
"Who's that?"
I said tremulously.
"Who do you think it is, you daft cow?"
"Tom!" I bellowed joyfully. "Let us in!"
"Who's us?"
he said suspiciously.
"Me, Jude and Sharon."
"I'd rather you didn't come up, hon, to be honest."
"Oh, bloody hell," said Sharon, pushing past me. "Tom, you silly bloody queen. You've only had half London up in arms ringing the police, combing the metropolis for you because no one knows where you are."
"I don't want anyone except Bridget," said Tom petulantly. I beamed beatifically at the others.
"Don't be such a prima bloody donna," said Sharon.
Silence.
"Come on, you silly sod, let us in."
There was a pause, then the buzzer went. "Are you ready for this?" came his voice as we reached the top floor and he opened the door. All three of us cried out. Tom's whole face was distorted, hideous yellow and black, and encased in plaster.
"Tom, what happened to you?"
I cried, clumsily trying to embrace him and ending up kissing his ear. Jude burst into tears and Sharon kicked the wall.
"Don't worry, Tom," she growled. "We'll find the bastards who did this."
"What happened?" I said again, tears beginning to plop down my cheeks.
"Well," said Tom, extracting himself awkwardly from my embrace. "Actually, I had a nose job."
Turned out Tom had secretly had the operation on Wednesday, but was too embarrassed to tell us. He was supposed to have been looked after by Jerome. When, however, creepy Jerome saw him after the operation, he was so repulsed he said he was going away for a few days. Poor Tom was so depressed and traumatized, and so weird from the anaesthetic that he just unplugged the phone, hid under the blankets and slept. In spite of our high spirits that he was alive, he was still very unhappy about Jerome.
"Nobody loves me," he said.
But two Bloody Marys later, he was laughing at Jerome's obsessive use of the term self-aware and his skin-tight, calf-length Calvin Klein underpants. Meanwhile, Simon, Michael, Rebecca, Magda, Jeremy and a boy claiming to be called Elsie had all rung to see how he was.
"I know we're all psychotic, single and completely dysfunctional, and it's all done over the phone," Tom slurred sentimentally. "But it's a bit like a family, isn't it?"
Tuesday, 21st of November, 5 p.m. Entire day has turned into nightmare. Richard Finch gave me a real blowing up at the morning meeting in front of everyone.
"Bridget, put that recipe book away, for God's sake! Fireworks burns kids. I'm thinking maiming. I'm thinking happy family celebrations turned into nightmares. What about that kid who had his penis burnt off by bangers in his pockets back in the 60s? Where is he now? Bridget, find the fireworks kid with no penis. Find me the 60s Guy Fawkes Bobbit."
I was just grumpily making my 48th phone call to find out if there was a burnt-off penis victim support group when my phone rang.
"Hello, darling. Is Mummy here?"
She sounded unusually high-pitched and hysterical. "Hi, Mum."
"Hello, darling. Just called to say bye before I go and hope everything goes well."
"Go where?"
"Oh, I told you. Julie and I are popping over to Portugal for a couple of weeks, just to get a bit of a suntan before Christmas."
"You didn't tell me."
"Oh, don't be a silly willy, darling. Of course I told told you. Anyway, do take care, won't you?
Yes.
Oh, darling, just one more thing.
What?
Oh, for some reason, I've been so busy, I forgot to order my traveller's cheques from the bank.
Oh, don't worry. You can get them at the airport.
But the thing is, darling, I'm just on my way to the airport now, and I've forgotten my banker's card.
I looked at the phone.
Such a nuisance. I was wondering, you couldn't possibly lend me some cash. I mean, not much, just a couple of hundred quid.
The way she said it reminded me of the way winos ask for money for a cup of tea.
I'm ever so close. If you just popped out to the NatWest opposite, I'll meet you there in 5 minutes, she gabbled. Super, darling. Bye. Bridget, where the fuck are you off to?
Yelled Richard as I tried to sneak out.
You found the banger Bobbit boy yet?
Got a hot tip, I said, tapping my nose, then made a dash for it. I was waiting for my money to come, freshly baked and piping hot, out of the cash point, when I spotted her scurrying towards me, wearing sunglasses and looking shiftily from side to side.
Oh, there you are, darling. Thank you very much. Must dash. Going to miss the plane. Bye, she said, grabbing the banknotes from my hand.
7 p.m. Just got home. Must cook dinner for guests. Right. Calm. Calm, inner poise. 8:30 p.m. All going marvellously. Guests are all in living room. Mark Darcy is being very nice and brought champagne and a box of Belgian chocolates. 9 p.m. Celery soup tasted like bowl of boiled cream. Right, we'll start on volute of cherry tomatoes. 9:15 p.m. Oh, dear. Think there must have been something in the blender, e.g. fairy liquid, as cherry tomato puree seems to be foaming and 3 times original volume.
Ah! Ah!
Just looked in fridge and tuna is not there.
What has become of tuna? What?
What? 9:30 p.m. Thank God. Jude and Mark came in kitchen and helped me make big omelette. And put the recipe book on the table so we could all look at the pictures of what char-grilled tuna would have been like. At least orange confit will be good. Looks fantastic. Tom said not to bother with Grand Marnier crème anglaise, but nearly drink Grand Marnier. 10 p.m. Be sad. Looked expectantly round table as everyone took first mouthful of confit, which had prepared yesterday. There was an embarrassed silence.
"What's this, hun?" said Tom eventually. "Is it marmalade?"
No sooner was the horrible meal cleared away than the phone went. It was Dad.
"I'm sorry, Bridget. I'm afraid there's been some rather bad news."
"What? What?"
"Your mother and Julio are wanted by the police."
I had to sit down and get my breath back while Dad said, "Bridget, Bridget, Bridget, Bridget," over and over again in manner of a parrot.
"What's happened?"
I managed to get out eventually. "I'm afraid they have defrauded a large number of people out of a great deal of money."
"What did they do?"
"Apparently Julio, using your mother as it were, front man, has relieved Una and Geoffrey, Nigel and Elizabeth, Malcolm and Eileen, oh my God, Mark's parents, of quite considerable sums of money, many, many thousands of pounds, as down payments on timeshare apartments, which never existed. Not a penny of your mother's and my savings or pension fund remains. And she has remortgaged the house. We are ruined, destitute and homeless, Bridget, and your mother is to be branded a common criminal." After that, he broke down. Una came to the phone saying that she was going to give Dad some Ovaltine. Replacing the receiver, I slumped against the wall. Immediately, though, Jude appeared. I told her the whole story. She didn't say a word, but immediately went and fetched Mark. "I blame myself," he said, running his hands through his hair.
"What do you mean?"
I heard him talking at the Tarts and Vickers party on his portable phone by the herbaceous border. He started to pace around the room, firing questions like a top barrister. "What's being done to find your mother? What are the sums involved? How did the matter come to light? What is the police's involvement?" It was pretty sexy, I can tell you. Wednesday, 22nd of November. Oh, thank God! Dad has had a phone call from Mum. The police were at Una and Jeffrey's, tapping the phone line, and said she definitely was calling from Portugal, but they didn't manage to get where. So much wish Mark would ring. Was obviously completely put off by culinary disasters and criminal element in family, but too polite to show it at time. Saturday, 25th of November. I'm going to see Dad this afternoon. 1 p.m. Hooray! Hooray! Just as I was leaving, had phone call. It was Mark from Portugal. Just incredibly kind and brilliant of him. Apparently, he has been talking to the police all week in between being top barrister and flew out to Albufeira yesterday. The police over there found Mum, and Mark thinks she will get off because it would be pretty obvious she had no idea what Julio was up to. They haven't found Julio yet. Saturday, 26th of November. It turned out Mum was arriving this evening at Luton under police escort. Dad and I were preparing ourselves to comfort a very different person from the one we had last been told off by, naively assuming that Mum would be chastened by what she had gone through. "Let go of me, you silly Billy!" a voice rang out through the arrival lounge. "Now we're on British soil, I'm certain to be recognised, and I don't want anyone seeing me being manhandled by a policeman." She went to the station with them. Monday, 27th of November, 9 a.m. Completely shattered. Dad and I were made to wait on a bench in the police station for 2 hours last night. Then Mum appeared. "Have you walked free?" I said. "Oh, don't be silly, darling. Walked free? I don't know," said Mum, rolling her eyes at the senior detective and bustling me out of the door ahead of her. The way the detective was blushing and fussing around her, I wouldn't have been in the least surprised if she got herself off by giving him sexual favours in the interview room. "So what happened?" I said, when Dad had finished putting all their suitcases, hats, straw donkey, isn't it super, and cassettes in the boot of the Sierra, and had started the engine. "All sorted out now, darling. Just a silly misunderstanding." "What happened, Mother?" I said dangerously. "What about everyone's money and the timeshare apartments? Where's my 200 quid?
"Oh, it was just some silly problem with the planning permission. So Julio's just paid all the deposits back. We had a super holiday, actually. The weather was very mixed, but..."
"Where is Julio?" I said suspiciously.
"Oh, he stayed behind in Portugal to sort out all this planning permission palaver."
"What about my house?" said Dad. "And the savings?"
"I don't know what you're talking about, Daddy. There's nothing wrong with the house."
Unfortunately for Mum, however, when we got back to the Gables, all the locks had been changed, so we had to go back to Una and Jeffrey's.
"Oh, do you know, Una, I'm so exhausted, I think I'm going to have to go straight to bed," said Mum after one look at the resentful faces, wilting cold collation and tired beetroot slices. The phone rang for Dad.
"That was Mark," said Dad when he came back. My heart leapt into my mouth as I tried to control my features. "He's in Portugal. Apparently some sort of deal has been done with the filthy wop, and they've recovered some of the money. I think the Gables may be saved." At this, a loud cheer went up from us all, and Geoffrey launched into, "For he's a jolly good fellow." December. Monday, 4th of December. just went to supermarket and found self unaccountably thinking of Christmas trees, firesides, candles, mince pies, etc. Then I realised why. The air vents by the entrance, which usually pump out baking bread smells, were pumping out baking mince pie smells instead. Cannot believe cynicism of such behaviour. Still no word from Mark Darcy. Tuesday, 5th of December. Cannot help but feel sad about the brutal trampling on the shoots of romance burgeoning between me and Mark Darcy by Marco Pierre White and my mother. But trying to be philosophical about it, maybe Mark Darcy is too perfect, clean and finished off at the edges for me, with his capability, intelligence, lack of smoking, freedom from alcoholism, and his chauffeur-driven cars. Maybe it has been decreed that I should be with someone wilder, earthier, and more of a flirt, like Marco Pierre White, for example, or, just to pick a name totally at random, Daniel. Anyway, must just get on with life and not feel sorry for self. 2 a.m. Why hasn't Mark Darcy rung me? Why? Why? Thursday, 14th December. Parties, parties, parties! Plus Matt from the office just rang asking if I'm going to the Christmas lunch on Tuesday. He can't fancy me. I'm old enough to be his great aunt. But then, why did he ring in the evening? Sexually tantalising Christmas lunch followed bizarrely by disco dancing in the afternoon. Such being editor's idea of a good time involves severe outfit choice complexity. Tuesday, 19th of December, 9 a.m. Oh, God, feel awful. Horrible, sick, acidic hangover. And today is office disco lunch. Cannot go on. I'm going to burst with pressure of unperformed Christmas tasks, like revision for finals. Have failed to do cards or Christmas shopping, apart from doomed panic yesterday lunchtime, as realised last night, was going to see girls for last time before Christmas at Magda and Jeremy's. Dread the exchange of presents with friends, as there is no way of knowing whether gifts should be tokens of affection or proper presents. So all becomes like hideous exchange of sealed bids. 2 years ago I'd bought Magda lovely Dini Hall earrings, rendering her embarrassed and miserable because she hadn't bought me anything. Last year, therefore, I didn't get her anything, and she bought me an expensive bottle of Coco Chanel. 9:45 a.m. Will not have anything to drink at disco lunch. Just be friendly and professional to Matt. Stay till about 3:30 p.m, then leave and do my Christmas cards. 2 a.m. Of course he's okay. Everyone runs off his Christmas parties. It's good fun. Must get sleep. Doesn't matter about clothes off. Thursday, 21st of December. For 10 days now have been living in state of permanent hangover and foraging subsistence without proper meals or hot food. Friday, 22nd of December. Now it is nearly Christmas. Find self feeling sentimental about Daniel. Cannot believe I've not had Christmas card from him. Maybe Mark Darcy will ring tomorrow to wish me Happy Christmas. Saturday, 23rd of December, 6 p.m. So glad decided to be festive home alone singleton like Princess Diana. 6:10 p.m. Wonder where everybody is. I suppose they're all out with their boyfriends or have gone home to their families. Anyway, chance to get things done. Or they have families of their own. Babies. Tiny, fluffy children in pyjamas with pink cheeks looking at the Christmas tree excitedly. Or maybe they're all at a big party except me. Anyway, lots to do. 6:15 p.m. Anyway, only an hour till blind date. 6:45 p.m. Oh, God, I'm so lonely. 8 p.m. Hurrah! A magic of Christmas miracle.
Daniel just called. Jones, he slurred. I love you, Jones. Having a terrible mistake. Coming round to check how your skirt is. Daniel.
Gorgeous, messy, sexy, exciting, hilarious, Daniel.
Midnight. Daniel. He rang up at 10 o'clock. Listen, Bridget. You know I always watch the match on Saturday nights. Shall I come round tomorrow before the football? Exciting? Wild? Hilarious? 1 a.m. Totally alone. Entire year has been failure. Sunday, 24th of December. Christmas Eve. Midnight. Re-confused about what is and is not reality. Mum and Dad, who are separated and planning to divorce, are sleeping in the same bed. In sharp contrast, my brother and his girlfriend, who have been living together for 4 years, are sleeping in separate rooms. The only thing that connects me to the real world is that, once again, I am humiliatingly spending Christmas Eve alone in my parents' house, in a single bed. Maybe Dad is at this moment attempting to mount Mum.
No.
Why did Brain think such thought? Monday, 25th December. Staggered downstairs, hoping hair did not smell of fags, to find Mum and Una exchanging political views while cutting crosses in the end of sprouts.
Oh, yes, I think what's-his-name is very good.
Well, he is. I mean, he got through his, what you might call it, clause that nobody thought he would, didn't he?
Oh, hello, darling, said Mum, noticing me. Now, are you going to come into the lounge and say hello to Uncle Geoffrey before you change?
She said.
So, come on then, Bridget,
quipped Geoffrey.
How's your love life?
Giving me one of his special hugs, then going all pink and adjusting his slacks. 12:30 p.m. Gift exchange was nightmare. Always overcompensate for bad presents, yelping with delight, which means I get more and more horrid gifts each year. I think this gravy's going to need sieving, Pam, called Una, coming out of the kitchen holding a pan. Oh, no, not this. Please, not this.
Have you tried stirring it?
Mum said. Don't patronise me, Pam, said Una, smiling dangerously. Mercifully, there was a distraction. A great crash and scream as a figure burst through the French windows. Julio. Everyone froze and Una let out a scream. He was unshaven and clutching a bottle of sherry. He stumbled over to Dad and drew himself up to his full height.
You sleep with my woman?
Ah, replied Dad. Merry Christmas. Can I get you a sherry?
Ah, got one already. You sleep, said Julio dangerously, with my woman.
Oh, he's so Latin, said Mum coquettishly while everyone else stared in horror. Julio was wild, drunk, unkempt, and frankly just the type I fall for.
You sleep, said Julio. With him?
He spat on the Chinese carpet and bounded upstairs, pursued by Mum. Okay, everybody, said Dad, in a tense, serious, manly sort of voice. There is a dangerous criminal upstairs using Pam as a hostage. I looked out of the window and nearly jumped out of my skin. There was Mark Darcy slipping, lithe as a whippersnapper, across the lawn and into the French windows. He was sweating, dirty. His hair was unkempt, his shirt unbuttoned. Everyone keep completely still and quiet, as if everything is normal, he said softly. I'm not sure whether Julio's violent. The police are outside. If we can get your mum to come downstairs and leave him up there, they can go in and get him.
Okay, leave it to me, I said, and walked to the bottom of the stairs.
Mum!
I yelled.
I can't find any savoury doilies.
Everyone held their breath. There was no response. Try again, whispered Mark, looking at me admiringly.
Mum!
I shouted up the stairs again.
Do you know where the sieve is? Una's a bit worried about the gravy.
Seconds later, there was a pounding down the stairs, and Mum burst in, looking flushed.
Now, what's she done with this gravy? Here. Oh, we're going to have to use the Magimix.
Even as she spoke, there were footsteps running up the stairs and a scuffle broke out above us.
Julio!
Shrieked Mum and started to run for the door. The detective I recognised from the police station was standing in the living room doorway.
All right, everyone, keep calm. It's all under control, he said.
Mum let out a scream as Julio, handcuffed to a young policeman, appeared in the hallway and was bundled out of the front door behind the detective. I watched her as she collected herself and looked around the room, appraising the situation.
Well, thank goodness they managed to calm Julio down, she said gaily after a pause. What a to-do! Are you all right, Daddy?
Your top, Mummy, is inside out, said Dad. I stared at the hideous scene, feeling as though my whole world was collapsing around my ears. Then I felt a strong hand on my arm. Come on, said Mark Darcy.
What?
I said.
Don't say what, Bridget. Say pardon, hissed Mum.
Mrs. Jones, said Mark firmly, I am taking Bridget to celebrate what is left of the baby Jesus' birthday. I took a breath and grasped Mark's proffered hands.
Merry Christmas, everyone, I said with a gracious smile. I expect we'll see you all at the turkey curry buffet.
This is what happened next. Mark took me to Hindlesham Hall for champagne and late Christmas lunch, which was very good. Christmas without Mum and Una was a strange and wonderful thing. It was unexpectedly easy to talk to Mark, especially with festive Julio police siege scene to dissect. It turns out Mark had spent quite a lot of time in Portugal over the last month, in manner of heartwarming private detective. He's really very sweet, Mark, as well as being rocky smart. How come Julio came back to England? Well, sorry to use a cliché, but I discovered his Achilles heel.
What?
Don't say what, Bridget. Say pardon, he said, and I giggled. I realise that although your mother is the most impossible woman in the world, Julio loves her.
So what did you do? I said, sitting on my hands to stop myself shouting.
What about me? Me? Why doesn't anyone love me?
I simply told him that she was spending Christmas with your dad, and I'm afraid that they'd be sleeping in the same bed. I just had a feeling he was crazy enough to attempt to, undermine those plans.
How did you know?
A hunch. It kind of goes with the job.
God, he's cool.
But it was so kind of you taking time off work and everything. Why did you bother doing all this?
Bridget, he said, isn't it rather obvious?
Oh, my God.
When we got upstairs, it turned out he had taken a suite. It was fantastic. V-posh and bloody good fun. And we played with all the guest features and had more champagne. And he told me all this stuff about how he loved me. The sort of stuff, to be honest, Daniel was always coming out with.
Why didn't you ring me up before Christmas then? I said suspiciously. I left you 2 messages.
I didn't want to talk to you till I finished the job. And I didn't think you liked me much.
What?
Well, you know, You stood me up because you were drying your hair. And the first time I met you, I was wearing that stupid jumper for my aunt and behaved like a complete clod. I thought you thought I was the most frightful stiff. Well, I did a bit, I said. But what? Don't you mean, but pardon? Then he took the champagne glass out of my hand, kissed me, and said, Right, Bridget Jones, I'm going to give you pardon for... Picked me up in his arms, carried me off into the bedroom, and did all manner of things, which means whenever I see a diamond-patterned V-neck sweater in future, I am going to spontaneously combust with shame. Tuesday, 26th of December, 4 a.m. Have finally realized the secret of happiness with men, and it is with deep regret, rage, and an overwhelming sense of defeat that I have to put it in the words of an adulteress, criminal's accomplice, and G-list celebrity. Don't say what! Say pardon, darling, and do as your mother tells you.